Welcome to the Floor Specifier Podcast. This is Brett Cyphers, and I am joined today by my co-host and fellow members of the Specifier Editorial Board. First, you have our editor-in-chief, Patrick Gillespie, who's an advisor with Adams & Reese. Then there's Jeff Littlejohn. He's with the National Stormwater Trust on site performance, and he's also a senior advisor at the Adams & Reese law firm. Next, we have Ryan Matthews. Ryan is a government affairs expert with the Gray Robinson law firm. I'm the government affairs director for CN Shoreline, and I host another podcast called Water for Fighting under the Specifier Media umbrella. Gentlemen, it's great to see you today.
Happy to be here. Thanks for turning down the air conditioning this time.
It was a little warm. It was a little warm last time, and it builds character amongst you lot, but I'm glad we have a little bit of air today. We also are glad to have Patrick back from his concert. Was it at Madison Square Garden?
MetLife Stadium.
Did you see Beyonce?
Oasis. It was a great time.
There's a throwback. Did the brothers fight on stage?
I thought they were, but no, they did not. They were well behaved.
Unfortunate.
It's a beautiful time.
Very nice.
So what else is going on, gentlemen? You have the conference season that's upon us. We did the big one. That's Environmental Permitting Summer School down on Marco Island. There's other ones going on. We'll talk about those later when we get to the calendar as part of this. But I think when I'm looking at what's happening, it's largely looking forward to committee weeks that are upcoming in the first week of October. And then the open grant portal, you know, for the state, which is just closed as of September 1st. And now it's nothing left but the cajoling, crying, yelling, et cetera, trying to get hands on what's this year's a smaller amount of money. Ryan, how is that process going for you? Start with the grant window.
Sure. I think we've covered in the past the difficult position, to put it lightly, that the department is in since the Water Quality Improvement Grant was not funded by the legislature for this fiscal year. In 25, I think we had $200 million for that and about $2.5 billion worth of applications. So that creates a bit of a struggle for those who are applying for the Water Quality Improvement Grant. The department does have money to be given out for the Indian River Lagoon, for the Biscayne Bay, and key stewardship, but you're really talking, I think, collectively $75 million there. So, you know, in total, a lot less in terms of what's in the pie for this fiscal year. So it's going to make getting money from the department all the more difficult. Remains to be seen what the legislature will do in 2026 as it relates to funding the Water Quality Improvement Grant. I think there's no shortage of people who are letting their lawmakers know that that grant was certainly highly identified and applied for, and hopefully we can write that in 2026. And you mentioned our first committee week is about a month away. That week of October 6th will be the first committees. Prior to October 6th, we also talked about the looming property tax debate and what will or will not happen as it relates to putting something on the ballot as it pertains to property taxes in 2026. The select committee that the House stood up the end of the 25 legislative session will meet in Tallahassee September 22nd and 23rd, I believe. So, you know, you're starting to have a lot of conversations throughout the state about what various proposals legislators will put forward that will, you know, run throughout those six committee weeks before the start of session in January.
Jeff, you have a few clients that you're working with that are actual applicants this go around for some of these grant funds. Given the limitations to the Water Quality Improvement Grant side of things, how are you trying to piece that together? Because I have some direct experience in seeing you try to you know, connect folks with those resources.
Yeah, I think we're just trying to build bridge, you know, use maybe leftover grant money that is still not completely consumed to try to bridge across to next fiscal year. There's also maybe going to be more of an appetite for the non-point source grant pots, which are smaller, but maybe can help form a little bit of a bridge across to next year. And I'm hoping that the department can, you know, get a little creative, maybe with some match money that gets spent, you know, as a part of that bridge into next year. I don't know. We're certainly, you know, trying to put all the ideas out on the table and having conversations with the department about how to keep programs and projects going across this little dry spell. I'm curious to hear whether anybody's hearing about maybe a larger batch of member projects next year to help either offset the impact of this or maybe serve as a hedge in case these grant programs get zeroed out. Is the trend going to go back towards member projects, or you think this was just an aberration?
Well, I think we saw the legislature fund a majority of water member projects this year, and that was, you know, antithetical to what happened in 24, where a vast majority of water projects got vetoed because they funded the Water Quality Improvement Grant. And, you know, I don't think that the temperature about future budget projections for the state, if funding remained consistent on a whole, has changed much. So with Speaker Perez and President Albritton still at the helm, I don't know that you're going to see a lot of change from the guidance that we were given in terms of our clients in applying for those projects, really the sweet spot being $500,000 or so, as opposed to, you know, $1, $2, $3 million that member projects had been, you know, applied for in years past. So I don't honestly see it changing that much unless you get a significant number of people, you know, advocating on behalf of both member projects as a whole and specifically funding the Water Quality Improvement Grant.
I think that's the thing that kind of sticks out to me, Ryan and Jeff, is they haven't answered that philosophical, the policy question that overlies it, which is, what is the reason for these members going the route they did with pulling money out of a going concern, meaning the Water Quality and Grant Program, into member projects? And so I think the question has to be answered, which is, do they want a place where they're going to deal with it in a way that one could call it underfunded or not? It doesn't matter. You if you're dealing with a few hundred million dollars or $400 million or $450 million in the Water Quality Improvement Grant Program, and you're doing similar amounts in member projects, there's the competition is still going to be, there are still going to be losers going after those dollars. How they want to approach it, it feels like the incentive structure is at least built for the, in my mind, the coming fall. It'll be interesting to find out if that structure has been built to do the exact same thing we ended up last year, rather than starting, you know, with, you know, the grant program funded and then pulling it and doing member projects. What do you think, Ryan?
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. I have heard from a number of folks who obviously represent local governments and various entities who take full advantage of those grant programs at DEP, and they certainly would like to see all of DEP's grants funded. But I also think you have a overwhelming philosophical belief in the legislature that, you know, local governments may come to the state and ask for too much money. And how does that go hand in hand with the property tax debate? So I think it'll be interesting to see how the legislature sees and whether they make the connection between local government revenues as a whole and how much the state should be helping, not only on environmental projects, but all type of projects where a local government may be seeking money from the state general revenue. Patrick, what do you think?
I want to divert a little bit, because there's a little bit of breaking news that just came through.
Interesting.
The Attorney General just announced that the 11th Circuit has blocked the lower court order to close Alligator Alcatraz, which is a very interesting development, given that there were rulings to close that down based on environmental concerns, and now potentially that facility will stay open.
Back in business.
Yeah.
I guess we'll have to wait to see if what is the basis for the overturning of that from, you know, is it environmental or is it some other piece of law that's involved there that caused that?
Yeah, don't know. Because they had announced several other facilities that they were planning on standing up, which, you know, Florida right now seems to be the most aggressive state pushing forward with these types of immigration detention facilities. So that'll be an interesting one to follow.
And it's also a convenient segue, thank you, Patrick, to talk about the newspaper itself. And so maybe it's a good spot to ask you to regale us with a little bit of a picture of the paper for the September-October issue of the Florida Specifier.
You know, I think we're obviously coming into this time of the year where things are a little bit slower. We're coming through conference season, and so we obviously recapped what was happening at Marco, which I think was another successful event with just great connections, great conversations, a lot of great speakers. So well done on everyone who's involved in that. And then the rest of the paper is a combination of, I think, some things that were breaking at the time. It's a little bit difficult with a bi-monthly newspaper to really get breaking news in, but we had the FWC bear hunt, which has obviously been a very big topic of conversation in Florida. Some news that was actually announced at Marco related to the Everglades. And then just a combination of different projects that districts, water management districts, are working on, and how those projects, kind of what we were just talking about, how those projects are ultimately leading to water quality improvements throughout the state. So kind of a smaller edition than normal as we ramp up for end of year and kind of pushing into session. I think those will pick up and be a little bit meatier for news. But, you know, the rest of our standard fare, some kind of bits and pieces from around the Gulf and different things around Florida.
To your point about the breaking or not breaking portion of the physical paper, you also have the newsletter, right, where you get, you know, some of these things, and I'm positive that, you know, this article about alligator Alcatraz is going to come up in the newsletter. Comes out every Monday morning and has a lot of those, you know, those environmental news pieces that I don't think everybody sees that often. I use Google Alerts and a bunch of different ways to try to get to it. And I think the great part of what you're doing and what Tracy is doing, you know, for these newsletters is getting people some of this information that they wouldn't see otherwise. And so, yeah, I think if you don't get the newsletter, let us know, because I think it's well worth it.
Yeah, I was actually just talking to a friend last night who says, you know, every Monday morning it pops up and first thing. And, you know, we designed that to be curated for this audience, and we create, you know, I think a good combination of federal issues, things that are happening in other states that may eventually affect Florida, local projects, local concerns, infrastructure projects. So it's kind of a mix of different things that I think this audience is interested in.
And I think for folks that are listening and that would like to participate, you are able to do that. Like if you have an item of policy, something that's going on issue-wise, and you want to flesh that out, we like to get well-worked, well-thought-out, information-based items to put in the paper. And so we welcome, as usual, Jeff, you do a great job of soliciting those types of things from, you know, from folks out there. I try to do it, but it's a lot of times you're trying to, you know, twist arms. And so if folks out there, if you have something that you think that people know about technology wise, the, you know, water, wastewater, you know, the air, you name it, I think you want to see it all, don't you, Patrick?
I do. Yeah. Please, Patrick@FloridaSpecifier.com. Send along your news, tips, and other information.
And your favorite Oasis song.
That will get you the most attention.
That will definitely help you get it in the paper. I failed to do that. I sent you an idea this week, but I did not include a Oasis song.
Did you hear back?
No, I did not.
Let's move to favorite articles. Let's start with you, Jeff. I'm sure you're going to want to cover our front page above the fold.
My favorite article in this month's paper, it's a good-looking paper, by the way, Patrick. The layout and everything looks really good. I like it. It is, you know, it's something that, you know, we did as breaking news. It was the announcement. When the governor came to Marco, that was very, very cool. It was, I think, first time he'd ever come to one of our conferences, and it was very nice that, you know, given all of the people that we already had down there, that he kind of came to us and did the announcement down there. It was great working with his team. The Corps of Engineers did a good job. You know, Jamie and everybody at the hotel did a great job. And I was very thrilled to see Patrick in the back of the room with legitimate press credentials, you know, covering it as a reporter and then writing a story about it. So it's very cool to have that story out the same day, Patrick. I think as it was happening, you were hammering out the story.
I think we were the first to publish online, which makes a lot of sense. You really emphasized the word legitimate there.
I didn't mean to. It was just cool that the specifier was in the room. We had a reporter in the room, and then we had a story up on that announcement really, really early. And so the story is in this edition of the paper. Kudos to you, Patrick, and a good story.
Thank you.
What about you, Ryan?
There were numerous articles that I liked, but I think the one that I would highlight is the article written by Representative Connerly dealing with distributed wastewater treatment units and the ability, through the legislation that he passed last year, House Bill 645, that would allow for a general permit to be sought, which really streamlines some unnecessary regulatory restrictions. This specific technology is really exciting and can help numerous areas in Florida, we've struggled with septic tanks and failing septic tanks for decades. And, you know, when I was at the department, the state was quite honestly struggling with identifying where septic tanks were, because there was, you know, some awkwardness between the Department of Health and DEP from a permitting standpoint, et cetera. We've traversed all that. But now we have the ability with this new and improving, evolving technology to put something into the ground that effectively acts like a septic tank, but is controlled and monitored from a central location. So you've effectively got a mini package plant in your backyard. And so this is exciting because it cuts off the connections that are often costly, especially for rural local governments, and a lot of the infrastructure, to the point where now you're going to get improved water quality and a better, you know, permitting system and an easier way forward through the department. And Rep Connerly certainly shown himself to be, you know, a very successful legislator in his early time in Tallahassee, and I think he was the perfect person to run this particular piece of legislation. I'm excited to see what he does next session. How about you, Brett? What do you got?
I'm going to pull what I affectionately call a Jeff Littlejohn and choose more than one this go around. I'm going to start with Alex Pricer's article. She's from Mitigation Marketing, and I got to meet her down in Mark Ryland, which was a real treat. In fact, Ryan, you and I got to interview her while we were down there, and that's going to come out here, I think, in the next couple of weeks, that conversation. But more importantly, I like that she draws the connection, that thread between how we dealt with wetland mitigation in the early days leading to some of the technological and policy advances that you got to over the years, and pulls that in with the nutrient issues, the stormwater and nutrient related issues that the state is dealing with right now. When you look at BMAPs, you look at especially statewide stormwater rule, which is requiring more treatment. And people are going to be scrambling by the next issue that comes out for us. It will be completely effective. And if you have an application to build something, you are going to have to deal with the new statewide stormwater rule as it stands. It's going to require solutions. I think that she is absolutely correct that I think the market will rise to meet the occasion. But it's good to have people like her that are reaching out to those folks that are out there that are searching for those solutions, to be able to say, hey, there are people out here that can help you solve that problem. So I think it's great. I think she's great. Looking forward to seeing what she's up to in the future. The other one article I think is for all four of our behalfs, and that is the City of Tallahassee's utility has received some actual awards. And I think, if you ask me anecdotally, deservedly so, Tallahassee Utilities has been recognized for reliability in their I think, largely power output. And if you've lived in Tallahassee, as we do, I think in years past, if you got a stiff breeze, if there was threats of rain somewhere in the tri-state area, we would lose power in pretty and fairly random and incoherent ways.
I take exception to that as they're a client of mine. But what I will say is that there have been significant investments not only in undergrounding a lot of our transmission lines at the City of Tallahassee, thank you very much, Brett, but also the amount of money that has been reinvested into the utility and the system, the grid, if you will, within the city, really has been tremendous. And I think that we show not only a cost effectiveness on average, you know, public power, municipally owned utilities are about $36 cheaper per 1,000 kilowatt hour than their investor owned utility brethren. But yes, I think we have seen tremendous advances in technology and investment that have proven results for City of Tallahassee customers.
Yeah, just I mean, and that's meant as a compliment, although I'll stick by, and I think the data for their award shows it, greatest reliability for greatest percentage decrease in annual average outage duration, which is great. Recognition for achieving a reduction of 10% or more in annual outage duration. That's fantastic. I think these are great things. And I think that, you know, those investments are paying off. So congratulations to you, to the city manager, Reese Goad, who's a good dude, and the City of Tallahassee.
It's like a comeback player of the year award.
I think their water tastes great.
Most improved.
Their water also actually national award winning.
Tastes great.
Well, Brett, let's talk a little bit about some of the most recent recordings that you and I have done and that you've done solo as well. I think that, you know, we had the privilege of interviewing Doug Corbett from the JW Marriott in Marco Island. That was an episode that was recently released and has been very well received, and kudos to Doug. We didn't know at the time, but just announced his retirement after 40 years with the Marriott Corporation. And so that's a good conversation and talking about the time that he has spent down in Marco, the evolution, some of the change, the dreaded Marco Lando experience that we had for about 3 years or so. You have the privilege of interviewing Mandy Rice from Swift Mud. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, Mandy's the assistant executive director at Swift Mud. She is a massively talented engineer. She has 30 years experience. She was at Tampa Bay Water for some of the most trying times, the growing pains that it experiences as trying to serve a three-county area with reliable source of water. She's done a phenomenal job at Swift Mud, and I encourage people to listen to it if you want to learn about, you know, what somebody was like, why they make the choices they make. She's a great listen. It's done very well already. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. She's also just a very good person.
So a couple more upcoming podcasts, I believe. Will you be down at the AWRA annual conference?
That has already happened, sir.
Yikes.
Yeah. So the release for that, we're going to put it out. It was a tough gig going to Key West to record that panel. It included Adam Blaylock from DEP, Kim Sugar, my former colleague at Arrow, and she's a former DEP and Department of Ag person, and Omar Franco from Becker Polyakov, and he is a federal lobbyist that works out of DC. And so we talked through some of the issues in their lives a bit, and I think it's going to be a good conversation for folks to hear. That's going to come out on both platforms, on both the Specifier and the Water for Fighting platform.
I'm excited to hear that.
Yeah,
we've also had the privilege of interviewing Alex Pricer. You mentioned her before from Mitigation Marketing. We sat down with her and Mark Thomason from the National Stormwater Trust down in Marco. So that one will also be forthcoming. We're excited to have that come out. And I think as folks start to get prepared for the 40th anniversary of Marco next July, you'll see that some of our sponsors are going to be afforded the ability to record a podcast with us. So certainly there is no shortage of content that is forthcoming.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. You actually have really good sponsors. I'm not just saying that because I don't care. They don't give me money to say that they're great. They are. And so I'm looking forward to a lot of those conversations with those folks that are your diehards, including company I work for.
Patrick, you want to talk a little bit about some upcoming events?
Sure. So we've got several things coming up this fall. So our friends Pepper Uccino, Jackie Larson, and David Rathke are hosting the Resiliency Florida Annual Conference. That's September 17th through the 19th at Sunseeker Resort in Charlotte Harbor. That's going to be tomorrow for those of you who are listening to this podcast the day it's released. It's going to be down in the Gainesville area. Bring your jorts to the Florida Local Environmental Resource Agency's annual conference, which will be September 17th through the 18th. And then later in the fall, the 30th Florida Remediation Conference, which is going to be November 3rd through the 5th. Do send your events to us. So we try to do a good job of seeking out what kind of environmental energy-related events that are out there, specifically in Florida. So if you do have events, please send those to us. Again, that's patrick@floridaspecifier.com. Try to get those in, and we will certainly run those on the website if it's in between editions. So again, just trying to be a resource for this community.
So hopefully between now and then we won't have any major hurricanes, since we're getting into the peak of hurricane season. But hope everybody stays safe. We'll be back with you to talk a little bit about what's been happening in Tallahassee as those legislative committee weeks start kicking off, and we have an idea of what policies will be put forward, especially in the environmental realm. And I think that about covers it. Thanks for listening to the Florida Specifier podcast. If you like what you hear, please be sure to hit subscribe on whatever platform you use to listen, and don't forget to leave a 5-star rating and review. If you don't like what you hear, it sounds a little bit like a personal problem, but do continue to keep listening because we're going to keep recording. But I'd recommend subscribing to the Florida Specifier online at floridaspecifier.com. You can read your environmental news and commentary the new, old-fashioned way. Please be sure to subscribe. It's easy and inexpensive and offers a ton of ways to read, watch, listen, and learn at your fingertips. Your support is greatly appreciated.
Production of this podcast is by Carl Sorn and David Barfield at Lonely Fox Studios, and we want to thank Bagels and Biscuits for letting us use their music for the podcast. Join us next time as we delve into the issues, policy, and people that environmental professionals and policymakers want to know about. For Patrick Gillespie, Ryan Matthews, and Brett Cyphers, I'm Jeff Littlejohn, and Brett made me do this outro. Also, we'll see you next time.